Hey, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of Mai Tai Happy Hour. I'm going to try to keep my voice to a minimum a little bit tonight because I've been going hard on conference calls all day long. But
yeah,
we are here. We have a great show today. We have a lot of good odds and ends. I like the odds and ends shows. Hambone, what do we have in store for the kids?
It really is an odds and ends show today. Spoilers, we are starting off talking about the fourth season of Fargo because holy shit, we have been trying in vain to not talk about this since the first episode dropped 11 weeks ago. We're also going to tell you maybe it's time to take a look back at Fallout 76 because Steel Dawn came out, and it's really giving people who may have frowned upon 76 a reason to check back into the Fallout world. We have so many albums to talk about today. Miley Cyrus came out with a new record. Billy Joe Armstrong came out with a new record. Iron Maiden came out with a new live record, and we've all definitely got some thoughts on that. So we're going to do a little chit-chat on a little bit of everything today. It's a potpourri of pop culture topics.
Speaking of pop culture topics and our cocktails, so today was a crazy day, Hambo. We're going to get to your – I'm going to segue to your cocktail, so I'm coming off on the cocktail. I'm not going to forget about it. But, weird year, very weird year all around.
Say the least.
Someone at my job – had the idea of trying to do a virtual event. I'm trying hard not to be negative Nelly at work. Like, I tend to be very much, I see things from a reporter point of view. I'm trying to be more of a team player at work. And, you know, throughout the idea of a virtual event, I go, look, I'll try it. We'll try it. Somehow that meant I'll host it. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. So we are like, and we're going to have our senior leadership, and you're literally going to host an event on, we have a platform called BlueJean, similar to Zoom and Google Hangouts, but a little more professional. And we're going to set you up downstairs in your basement. I used all my rig we used to do Mai Tai TV with, and you're going to host our executives who are going to have breakout sessions. And during the time when there isn't a breakout session with an executive, you're going to entertain the few people that hang out and don't want to, you know, talk to a leader because they're a YouTuber or something. Oh, Hambone, little did I know that there was going to be like, everyone's going to be like, oh, it's George. Let's hang out with George. It turned into an hour-long, basically Mai Tai happy hour with our senior leadership of Verizon.
So you're saying Hans was the new Hambone?
It was a very, very interesting, you can never be replaced. But
you tried it once and you failed.
It was so surreal. It was the strangest thing I've ever done in my professional career, but it was definitely good. I had 50 reporters on this thing for an hour. We had Leslie Odom Jr. He is a he performs in Hamilton, and he's also a Tony and Grammy Award winning person. I don't know much about
him.
Good
for you, man. People love that.
Very,
Hamilton.
Very nice guy. But I had these people on this thing, and I had a list. I knew this might happen, so I had a list of stuff. Like, you talk to any comedian, and they will say the hardest thing in the world is doing more than 5 minutes of comedy. 5 minutes of comedy is hard. I had 20 minutes to entertain 20 to 30 people. I busted out, Hambone, everything I could do, including on a Verizon-sponsored event, showing people how to make my Mai Tai.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was very, very odd. We talked about is Die Hard a Christmas movie? We talked about Nightmare Before Christmas. We talked about our favorite. I was giving away. I had the Krampus stocking. I was giving away chargers. We're giving away chargers to people. It was so strange. I thought it was really good. It was just, we're trying anything because, people want to see other people, but it is, and I'm finding that even on things like that, where the chat was blowing up, people weren't talking over each other, but instead the chat was like, hey, how are you doing? How are you doing? Like, it's just 10 months into it, the amount of human interaction that we're craving is insane. And I'm right there with everybody. So if you're listening to this and you attended the event, I thank you very much. I know I was a little over emotional on it. That's all true. Cause it's, I went from launching 5G last year, Hambone, where I was on the road a week, every single month, hard seeing everybody on the road to, nothing. And this a little bit too, but last year for me was crazy. And it's now I haven't seen anyone since CES. Really bonkers. But anyway, I got to give my tie. I want to segue into whatever your cocktail is for the today. So the floor is yours, Hambone.
Well, it's not nearly as classy as the Mai Tai. This is the Atomic Cocktail from Fallout New
Nice.
Vegas.
It was nice.
It's a hard week. It's a hard week to try to find a way to tie the cocktail into the topics that we're going to talk about and not being redundant. So this is a bonkers one. You're going to want to get at least a pint glass, maybe an imperial pint, 20 ounces. You're going to want to drop in 2 ounces of vodka. I would go with a citrus flavored vodka for this if I had my dithers. I would pop in 4 ounces of orange soda. I recommend Stewart's Orange and Cream. And then you're going to get 6 Mentos. Yes. So what you're going to do is you're going to get an extra long straw. You're going to make sure that the vodka is chilled. Make sure the soda is ice cold because there's no ice in this drink. You are going to pop it in the glass. You're going to drop the Mentos in to generate a physical reaction. You're going to drink with a straw the Atomic Cocktail from Fallout New Vegas. It's going to be fucking messy.
I mean, look.
I wouldn't make it.
It is what it is. I would probably take a sip. It's not as bad. Like, look, it's not as weird as some of the other stuff you've thrown at me where, you know, there's eggs and things like that involved. Not to do well with that.
Eggs is a reasonable accommodation in a classy cocktail. Mentos is definitely a bad idea anyway you got it.
So did you have a lovely Thanksgiving, Hambone?
I didn't do anything. I think I edited an episode of like Vintage RPG and I kind of watched TV. I had chicken nuggets, so I had something close to turkey. Did a Zoom call with my parents and my brother, and, you know, it was all right. I'm not really a big Thanksgiving guy to begin with. And like I get it. I absolutely get it. It's funny, you know, 2019, you're talking about a few seconds ago how you were in a different, you know, city every week doing 5G. Like, we went from being the most connected group of people to being the most isolated within a snap of a finger. And I know that it's definitely been hard for a lot of different people. And I know that with the spike of COVID going on, it's hard to, like, you know, tell people like, hey, this has been going on for a fucking long time, but hang in there. Don't go see your family because you might kill them. Like, it's tough. But for me, I kind of just try to look at it, you know, as a holiday in general, a holiday where you are focused on giving thanks for the and having gratitude for what you have in your life. And I was kind of like, all right, so it's a bummer. Didn't get to do a Night Before Thanksgiving show, but we got to release a Christmas single for Secret Country. It's out now on Bandcamp. I didn't get to go to any parties, but like yet I'm not sick. I got a roof over my head. I get to do Mai Tai Happy Hour every week. I get to work on different like projects and be creative. And like, I miss people so fucking much, but I know that when we get through this, the fucking parties we are going to have, they're going to have to outlaw parties because there's going to be too many parties and it's going to be fucking out of control and it's going to be crazy. So just hang in there, everybody. I'm so thankful for each and every one of you listening to the show week in and week out. And, you know, it's going to get better. We're going to get there together. But that's kind of what I did for Thanksgiving. I kind of just dorked out and like watched some TV and like didn't really do anything. By the time I was done, I was already back at work for Black Friday and holy shit. Try working customer service for like Black Friday and Cyber Monday. It's a lot of phone calls.
I feel your pain. I also work for a company as a retail front. I got to experience something very interesting. We went up to my parents' attic. I was helping my parents get down the Christmas stuff on Thanksgiving or put up the Thanksgiving stuff. My parents do they dress up the house for every holiday. Like, they go big for the weird holidays like Valentine's Day and like Thanksgiving. So my mom does like post-winter like decorations after Christmas. I put up their Thanksgiving stuff. I pulled down their Christmas stuff. And while I was up there, I was like, let me see if I can find. I was trying to find my Star Wars figures. Gabe has been obsessed with R2-D2 and C-3PO, watching the droid cartoons that we talked about last week, the Lego ones.
Nice.
And I was like, let me see if I can find them because they're not in my house. And I know I still have wrestling figures and the larger G.I. Joe stuff, the headquarters and all that, in my parents' house. Maybe my Star Wars stuff was there too. And I did find it in a weird corner of my parents' attic. I brought down a box. And the box contained my, not Star Wars from like the 70s. I was too young for that. But the second release in the 90s prior to the prequels, but, you know, like the anniversary editions. So I had those figures. And in the box, I also found my original 1995 Burger King Toy Story toys, like from the Happy Meals.
Oh, wow.
And I just gave the whole box to Gabe. And to see this child's eyes light up. Not only to find like the original Toy Story, he doesn't know when they're from, but like to see these, and they're good size too. And all these Star Wars figures, like all of them, like he's just got baby Yoda, like a real little Yoda. Doesn't scare him as much as the one I have in my closet that lives in the closet now. But just to see his face, it made Thanksgiving worth something. It made a lot more wonderful for me. So I appreciate that. So he's got his Star Wars figures now. He's happy as anything.
That's awesome.
That was a good experience. One thing that's definitely been amazing, we've been talking about a little bit here. We are not going to spoil it for you because I feel too few people have seen it. So we're not going to say what the end game was, but we want to talk a little bit more about Fargo. We talked about it after the first episode, which was an amazing episode. It was a weird episode. It was nothing like the Fargo you've seen in the past. And the show's ended. And I could say without a doubt, first of all, weird that it's 11 episodes. Weird numbering. But wow, Hambone, it was like the best mob story I've seen in years.
Decades, easily.
Yeah, like maybe since Casino. It's so good.
I mean, it's on a different scale than a Casino. It's on a different scale than even a Goodfellas. And it is really a legit mob story about different mob families and different races of mobsters and how they were treated, especially in the Midwest in America in like what, the 50s, like the early 50s?
Yep, 50s. It was? Well, I mean, the show starts in the early 1900s and shows the rise of different mob families through Kansas City. So it started with, I think, the Irish and then went to the Italians and then the Blacks or maybe vice versa. And you see how one culture takes over another culture's criminal empire. It's very interesting, that first episode. But, you know, they get to 1950-51, where they basically have the black mob versus the Italian mob. And this is the Italian mob that's going to become the mafia, that's from old school Italy. And it is run by this very, you know, this very, like the Don, like very similar to you would see in The Godfather. But his next in charge is Jason Schwartzman, who I mean, I love Jason Schwartzman, but this is his career in this movie right now. Like everything he has had from not being in the limelight for the last decade or so, he's made up for. And I think he definitely deserves kudos for his performance in this as the Italian mob boss versus Chris Rock's black mob boss. Wait, on paper, Hambone, this sounds just weird, right?
Well, yeah, because the last thing people probably remember Chris Rock from is like Adam Sandler movies, you know, where Chris Rock, exceptional comedian, exceptional actor. However, like in the last like several years, a lot of his output has been like, you know, working, doing Adam Sandler style movies or like movies where he's not really stretching his range at all. And he's just kind of playing a version of Chris Rock. In Fargo, he puts in a performance that is never once does he slide into the Chris Rock character or gimmick. Like he acts his ass off in this show. And it really brings a real gravitas to the whole situation. Because then you also have Jason Schwartzman, who on paper, like people know him from like Wes Anderson movies. And the way he has a very specific version of Jason Schwartzman from the Wes Anderson style movies. And that doesn't really show up here until the scene really calls for it. Where like, you need that slight bit of levity. You need that slight bit of kind of like, this is a person who's clearly in over their head and they're freaking out a little bit. But he does it in a way where it doesn't betray the story. And he does it in a way where it's kind of, he never really gives you what you expect. And it really adds to his performance as well. I mean, crazy ensemble cast. Timothy Oliphant's in this as well. It's one of the best seasons of TV I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. To the point where I kind of was like, I don't want to talk about anything else for the last like 11 weeks. I should have pushed harder to do a weekly Fargo thing, but it pays off. And it does it in a way where the story kind of wraps up at the end of episode 10. Yep. And episode 11, and that's why I was kind of like, oh, it's weird, it's an 11 episode thing. They did a really cool thing, I think, where, and this isn't spoiling anything, but they could have added a few more minutes, maybe 10 minutes, to the end of episode 10, tied everything up like a nice little bow, and you would have been completely fucking satisfied. No problem, right? Instead, they go and they take a full like 45 minutes, and they stretch out that ending, and they really, really, when I say stretch it out, it's the most like delightful like stretch out, like yeah, someone is baking you a pie out of fresh dough, kind of stretching out. Like you are waiting to see what happens next.
There's no wasted time.
Not a single wasted second. And I actually kind of applaud the people who make the show because they could have tacked a few minutes onto an episode here, a few minutes on an episode there, but they decided, fuck that. We're doing tight storytelling and always leaving the audience wanting more. Now, the last episode, it really does definitively tie everything up. But I sat there being like, man, I would have watched 20 episodes of this series. Like, because everyone is really dialed in and putting on the performance of their lifetimes. Holy shit, the show is great.
Yep, no, it is incredible. And all these characters, I don't even know. Like, they brought in a ton of Boardwalk Empire people in this. Like, that the freaking brother of the mob boss from Crazy Eyes, and his death is so Wes Anderson, too. The Coen brothers, too. Like, that was such a weird thing. I shouldn't have spoiled that, but you probably won't remember if you watch it. You're right. The ending, the last episode was basically an epilogue. When I realized that it was only less than an hour long, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, because most of the episodes had been an hour and a half, which I believe when you do the final count makes them like a solid hour. And I feel that might have been on purpose, just in case Fox didn't take it or FX didn't take it. They could have went to an HBO or an AMC. The fact is, this show stopped being Fargo a long time ago. This is Fargo in name. I mean, it feels a little, I mean, this didn't take place in Fargo. There is maybe a reference to Fargo in it, but it is truly a self-contained mob story, unlike anything we've seen on previous Fargo seasons, which are all self-contained and are all great. I loved them all, but it's been like a two-year gap since the last season, and it was so worth it. I don't know if they'll do another one. I could tell you, judging just by Twitter and seeing that it wasn't trending at all during the finale, which I was shocked. I know football is on, but like, I'm like, how is this not trending? And 90 Day Fiancé is... And I love 90 Day Fiancé.
You do love 90 Day Fiancé. Jesus Christ.
You know, Survivor Series is trending, and this is not trending.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange, too.
But look, it teach their own. It's weird. I mean, it's a weird type of show. I want people to watch it. It's multicultural in the right way. It is great. All the actors, everyone, top to the bottom, is incredible. Even the kids are incredible. It has a very definitive ending. And everyone gets their story played out. It is some of the best television. Again, we joke around about prestige television. This is pure prestige television. This is, I know that it probably didn't get the ratings that it should have, but I hope the Academy sees it for what it is, and it does at least get, everyone deserves awards for this one.
Yeah, I can definitely see people winning Emmys for this shit left and right. Getting renewed, I don't know, man. I think all bets are off when it comes to TV renewal because of COVID. Like, we're going to see what it's really going to take to get a show brought back, knowing because of the COVID protocols. One character I want to point out, actually two characters I want to point out specifically, my two favorite characters on the show. The first is Salvatore Esposito. He played Gaetano Fada. Holy shit. He was a slab of a man, and he was crazy, and he had the craziest eyes, and like, I never wanted to not have a scene with him in it, because he is so crazy and so intense in this in all the right ways. Like, he never really becomes a caricature of himself. He always feels dangerous, right?
Yeah. You know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of the guy who played Kingpin, Vince, whatever his name is, who played Kingpin in Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I actually had to check to make sure it wasn't him, because again, this guy is a fucking huge, intimidating dude. And he just has that crazy downright, just like the guy who played Kingpin in Daredevil.
Yeah. The other character was Imari Crutchfield, Ethelrelda Pearl Smutney, which I think this has got to be her breakout performance. You know, she more recently had been, you know, smaller parts in other movies. She popped up in True Detective. She was in, I think, the remake of Roots. She was in Vacation with the dude from The Office, whose name escapes me. That, like,
we don't need to remember that.
Didn't make an impact. But this is the kind of thing where, like, a character like this, if she, this is not her breakout performance, then I don't know what the fuck is going on, because she was fantastic in this. Everybody was fantastic. You should all go and watch Fargo Season 4. It's worth your time.
Yeah, no, 100%. I will say, when you were talking about COVID before, I just want to interject and say, look, it's been 3 years since the last season. I think FX is not like some of these other places where if you don't produce every single year, that's it, you're done. I think if they create a piece of art, much like HBO did with True Detectives, they'll wait for it. So I don't think that's at the mercy of you need to get one done now at COVID cost, or you can't because it's not worth our time. So right. I think FX has held on to shows that slumped in ratings to let it complete and play out. So we'll see how that goes. But
FX is Disney though, so I.
Good point. But
you know, that's kind of what I'm going to say.
But I don't know where Disney is with that because they haven't canceled stuff like Netflix has either. So I don't know. I don't know where that lands now. But again, Fargo, loved it. And definitely check it out. It should be on Hulu soon. I can't rave about this more. I just want people to watch it. But let's talk about some music. A whole bunch of albums dropped this week.
Every album dropped this week.
And the one that piqued my interest a little bit was you mentioned Miley. We were talking about Machine Gun Kelly and his pop punk emo album they released, which, by the way, went number one. It's his first number one selling album. It's become his, like, main, like, this has become what he's now known for, which is crazy. He went from being, you know, a pretty well-known hip-hop artist to being, you know, he could just keep doing this and he'll make all the money, which is unusual because, like, a Lil Wayne tried to do this, didn't work out well. Anytime someone crosses genres, unless it's like the country, it doesn't usually pan out too well.
Well, but, because you have to go all the way.
Yeah, like, and he did.
And that's the thing. That was the problem with the Lil Wayne thing. Lil Wayne never fully went for it. He always kind of kept one foot in his comfort zone. Like, say what you will, but Machine Gun Kelly, he went all in on the emo. And I can say that I was in Pansy Prep. Like, yo, he went full emo.
Yeah, I saw his performance on the American Music Awards with Travis Barker. Wow. I mean, those songs are great. He has a really good album. If you like that type of music, and I do, and we'll talk about it a little bit here, I do like pop. I really do like good pop where it's not gimmicky. And Miley Cyrus has released an album. I think we thought this was going to be similar in the vein to the Machine Gun Kelly album, but it's not. It's definitely more of a rock album, I guess. It's more of a Miley trying to do more of a stripped down version of what she's known for, but it definitely is more in the pop vein than I would think it, you know, than saying this is a rock album. This isn't Miley's rock album, but, I mean, I could speak to it. I listened to it for quite a bit today. I enjoy it. It reminds me of Lady Gaga a little bit, but I also find that I enjoy her hearing her voice not processed.
I really liked it. I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I will say, you gotta like, I'll go on record.
You got to like her voice to
I do.
Oh, you do? I didn't know if you were a fan or not.
Oh, no. I think... And I will, I'm glad that I'm saying this on record, that I think that she is possibly one of the greatest voices to come out in the last 30 years. I think that if music was treated differently, as if it were in like the 80s and the 90s, and she had come along with the level of talent that she has, the musical landscape would have been a wildly different place. I think she's one of the most talented performers to come out easily 3 decades, mm-hmm. hands down. Like, a voice that is, you know, on par with some of the greatest singers of all time. And she's just getting started. She's still in the baby phase of her career, even though she started as like a teen pop star. Like, she's in her, like, I don't know, early 20s, mid 20s at this point. Like, she's got a ways to go. The thing is, I know she's going to put out a Metallica covers album, which I'm very excited
That's
about.
That's what I think we might have gotten confused with a little bit.
Well, I knew that was getting made. I wasn't expecting this album.
All right, so someone is joining us. I'm sorry.
Hey, buddy.
You can't wear the headphones because I got to listen to Uncle Hambone. I'm sorry, buddy.
They want headphones.
Oh, you want the headphones.
We'll have to get him his own headphones.
We need to get your own headphones. I promise one of these weeks you're going to have a headphones and you're going to have a microphone and we're going to talk about music with you. Is that okay? But I'm talking to Uncle Hambone. And that's the microphone, and maybe we shouldn't touch the microphone. I'm going to go on mute. You keep talking about Miley.
Okay, so the thing with Miley Cyrus is her voice is exceptional. She has an incredible range, incredible performer. I wasn't so impressed with this album because it's still, you know, like I said a few minutes ago with the Lil Wayne thing, it's still got like one foot in the comfort zone. And even with a lot of pop music as it is now, it plays it a little too safe and it's a little too sterilized. Like, she sings so well. I don't know that they ever really let her open up on this album until you get later in the record. And once you're later in the record, you have a version of Midnight Sky that she does early in the album. It's called Edge of Midnight, which is a mashup between Edge of 17 by Stevie Nicks and the Midnight Sky from Miley Cyrus. And it's like the real first moment on the album where you're like, oh shit, like this is happening. I mean, the ballads, she always knocks it out of the park on the ballads because that's kind of the only time in these productions, they really like let her sing. But even songs where she has a duet with Joan Jett and she does Night Crawling with Billy Idol, I feel like Billy Idol kind of got neutered in the whole thing. And you want to hear that Billy Idol, you know, kind of thing.
I got to argue with that. I actually was afraid he would take up too much of the album. I think he has like a verse, and I appreciate it. That hook on that song is so good that I don't.
The hook is good, but they don't actually let either one of them go for it. And if you're gonna have Billy Idol on your fucking album, let him be Billy Idol.
I don't know how much Billy Idol can be Billy Idol these days, but
hey man,
I love that.
Billy Idol still fucks.
That song is the best Sisters of Mercy song I've heard in years.
It's actually a really good Sisters of Mercy song. That's not Sisters of Mercy, but later on the album she does three covers. She does she does two covers. She does Heart of Glass and she does Zombie. This is the kind of thing where I would love to see Miley Cyrus get to do more of, where you actually have a band behind her and you have the energy of having a band behind you instead of just very overprocessed guitars and drums and things that are just kind of like put in there with a keyboard, which I have no problem with, because there's a lot of acts out there that really do good work with fake instruments. But there's some times where it's just too dialed into what pop music is now, instead of like you have like the greatest voice that you could possibly have on the other side of that glass in front of a mic. Like, let her go. Let her do what she's going to do. I am fucking excited to hear her do that Metallica record, because anytime she like actually plays with the band, some of the best shit you'll ever hear.
Yeah, look, I like the album a little more. I treated it for what it is, which is kind of I thought it was just fun, and I thought it was good to hear her a little bit more raw. If you're a fan, go for it. If you like good music, go for it. Again, it wasn't anything extraordinary. I think I agree with you on everything here, except I love that Billy Idol song.
I like it. I just thought they could have, let Billy Idol be Billy Idol a little more.
Because look, realistically, dude, he probably phoned in the track. Like, really, not phoned in like he didn't do it. He probably just sent him the track and told him to plug in the spot, because it's COVID, and I think it was recorded during this.
Yeah, I get it.
I mean? I think a lot of albums are going to be like that now.
I hear Billy Idol. I want more, you know? Like, come on, man.
I love my Billy Idol, too. I really do. Tandem, a little bit music-wise, Bad Religion just announced a wonderful thing. They will be doing it's their 40th anniversary. Obviously, we were supposed to see them with the Alkaline Trio, and that got canceled early on. But they are they produced four concerts at the Roxy, or the Ritz, the Roxy, in New York City in October, and they will be releasing them as a live stream in the next couple of weeks. So they're going to be doing a one a week, and it's going to be, I think it's a $40 fee for all four concerts, or you can do $15 a show, and they're going to do their eras. So there's going to be like the first show is going to be their 80s, and then the 90s, and then the 2000s, and the 10s. And they're going to do interspersed interviews and singer-songwriter stuff in there, storyteller stuff. And they're going to be doing behind the scenes and setting up. And it's going to be like they're going to do the best they can with a 40-year anniversary. So I'm excited for that. We had talked about this before. You have purchased live streams. I am not a fan of watching music, but I love Bad Religion enough where I sure as hell am going to get this. But that is happening now. That was just announced today. Definitely check out Bad Religion's Instagram or whatever to find out more about that.
Yeah, you know what? I purchased a Thursday live stream, and I thought it was fantastic. And I know, like, I'm always like, Mr. Support the bands. And it's great that you're going to buy these live streams to support the bands. But I will tell you, as a person who loves music, who loves going to shows, when you have that live stream on and you see them like actually live doing it, there is something that gives you that little endorphin rush. Like, yes, you're not up against a barricade. Yeah, you're not in a smoky club. But man, actually hearing a band playing live feels so fucking good. It is worth your money to pop in on these live streams. If there's a band you like, definitely check it out. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, it's an ADD thing, which is hard to watch, especially with a kid. It's hard for me to watch a concert. In this case, I will make the time for it, so I'm excited.
Quick little sidebar.
Go ahead.
You're going to have to make sure Santa brings him his own little head, his own little...
I had you on mute. I had me on mute. He started singing into the mic while you were talking about it. He had the headphones on, was listening to you talk about it, and then started singing into the mic. And I was almost tempted to unmute him, but I thought you might murder me. But he starts it. He so loves us doing this. He's now comes down every week to watch us doing it. Yeah. We definitely should get him a headset. I might actually get him a mic that I can mute and unmute because he's just going to start doing it every week anyway. On another note, Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day, lead singer of Green Day, who has been very prolific during COVID. He's been appearing everywhere. We even tried to, I was trying to get him for a Verizon thing because he's doing acoustic stuff left and right. He released an album of his cover songs. I believe everything done by him. It's full musical arrangements. It's not just acoustic stuff. Him doing a ton of different covers. And I listened to it. I could tell you I like the Miley Cyrus album more. I love Green Day. I love Billy Joe Armstrong. But I thought this was like the safest adult contemporary cover album ever.
Well,
Talk about safe.
Yeah, I agree with you. But at the same time, like, he put some real bangers on there that, like, you're kind of really happy to hear Billy Joe sing. Like, I mean, he starts off with I Think We're Alone Now. He does Manic Monday. He does That Thing You Do from That Thing You Do. He does You Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory by Johnny Thunders. He does Give Me Some Truth. Like, he does, you know, Kids in America. And, like, in the end, the back three songs, the riding this thing out, he does Whole Wide World by Reckless Eric, which is awesome. He does Police on My Back.
Yep.
And he ends it up with a New England by Billy Bragg. Yes, safe as shit, right over the plate. But, man, you're kind of really happy to hear him sing these songs.
Safe
kind of feels real good.
Safe as shit and also done. It was very much reminded me of the Weezer album where they did it so perfectly like the originals. That I was like, I just wanted, like, it was so like a covers album.
Yeah, but then again, if you heard any of these songs kind of reimagined, you'd be like, oh, that's bullshit. Why don't you just play it like the originals? Like, there's no winning this situation.
And I know. Yeah. And I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, I'm not arguing. It's not a bad, I mean, musically, sonically, it's great. I mean, I'm sure he just produced the whole thing in his bedroom like everyone else is doing during this. I just was hoping for a little more balls. And I was like, oh, this is like I could play this for my parents and they would like it.
I think that's good.
I don't think it's bad. So I'm not arguing you on this. It's just, I found it safe. And like, whereas Weezer, I think I liked Weezer's choice of songs a little more because they were unusual, like Toto's Africa. And they did a great job on Sweet Dreams. In this case, it just was like, even at the time, these songs were kind of safe. I do think he did a great job with New England, whatever that song is by Billy Bragg, which for some reason I thought was a Joe Strummer song. I thought it was that song off of Cut the Crap, but I forgot what the name of that song is. It's also about England.
Yeah, no.
Josh right now is going, I can't believe you don't remember that song. It's like the one good song on Cut the Crap. But
oh my God, Cut the Crap was literal crap.
But you know, he did Please Have Me Back. It's very good. It's very safe. If you love Green Day, if you love Billy Joe Armstrong, you will love this album. You know, I appreciate that he's still doing what he's doing.
It's funny too because I think his kids played on a bunch of tracks too. So he like did it without having to pay the other dudes any kind of royalties for like making it a Green Day covers album. So dude knows what he's doing. He released a couple albums. I don't know what time is anymore, but like a few years back called The Long Shot, where he was doing small club gigs, and it was essentially him doing like Johnny Thunder style Green Day songs. It was good. It was definitely good.
I think this is a little bit better. Isn't that though his kids? I thought that was the band he did with his kids.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I missed it. I missed it. Then the world ended a little bit.
No, that's fine. We've all been there. I feel like we just need to continue the music thing because it feels right.
Yeah.
Iron Maiden yes. Finally released their live album. I've been talking about it every week. Bruce Dickinson has been super psyched about reaching out to people. I mean, Bruce Dickinson's not exactly the most open/accessible musician. I don't usually see him doing interviews. I don't see him really talking to people. You know, at least since his return to Iron Maiden years ago. And to see him just like playing pinball in Hawaiian shirts, talking to fans on YouTube is amazing. He's been the one doing most of the press for this new live album. It is from the Legacy of the Beach tour that we saw at the Barclays Center last year, which I believe was one of the happiest moments of your life.
It really was, hands down.
Seeing Hambone's face for that was amazing. This is them in Mexico. The crowd is on fire. And it is a wonderful, wonderful way to hear Iron Maiden do the classics today. And it's getting to hear just how great Bruce Dickinson still is. As a live album, the choice of songs, and look, Legacy of Beasts was a greatest hits tour. So it was what it was. It was not, you know, you've heard most of these songs on other live albums. This doesn't, unless you are an Iron Maiden fan, you probably don't need to own this, but I see it as a moment in time, and an important moment in time, which is, you know, Bruce Dickinson's return to form post-cancer, doing the classics, hitting those notes. I know some people have complained they throws the mic out to the crowd too much. I'm like, no, I'm a punk rocker. I love when bands throw the mic out to the crowd.
Yeah, man.
Who gives a shit? I don't think it's a tough note. I think he's just throwing it to the crowd. And, you know, that crowd is just intense. The sound is raw. I find the recording to be much rawer than some of their more polished stuff. And I love the choice of songs, as I did when we saw them on tour. I think Greater Good, one of the songs off of State of, I'm blanking, but there's one song on here that I think has never been on a live album before. And also Flight of Icarus is on, that hasn't been done in years. I love this show. It brings me back happy memories to good times. I got it on triple Mexican vinyl, Mexican flag colored vinyl from Walmart.
That's awesome.
and I saw that they had like a box set package on their website. And I was looking to get that until I realized it doesn't come with a luchador mask. And I'm like, money left on the table for not doing an Eddie luchador mask is insane, because he was even wearing a luchador mask when we saw them on the previous tour, the Book of Souls tour.
Book of Souls.
I'm like, he so should have done that, especially considering this is the whole theme. I think there may have been a Mexican flag in the package, but there was no luchador mask. So I did not go for it. I went for the Walmart exclusive instead.
That works.
But definitely, I don't know if you've listened to it, but it is.
I listened to it this morning.
Anytime I could hear them going, it's great. It feels like the production on this is just louder. I don't know if raw is the right word, but it feels more powerful. And all the classics on here, Fear the Dark, Trooper. Everything just feels more intense, which I love. The fact that a band in their 60s are still like fucking firing on those type of cylinders and not phoning it in.
Yeah, dude, I got up at early this morning, so I had to do some cooking for the house, and I popped it on. I put it on my computer, put the speakers on. I had it on like not the loudest volume, but even on not the loudest volume, it is still powerful as fuck. Yeah. And I'm sitting here and I'm just smiling and cooking, man, because like I fucking love Iron Maiden. But also, I'm like, man, that was like the last. I mean, we saw Bob Mould, right? Yeah. We saw Bob Mould, and that was the last show I saw. We saw together before the world shut down a bit. But like, Iron Maiden was the last like real concert I saw. And it was one of those things where like, you know, it was before I had my back procedure done. So like standing was hard for me, but I was like, I feel no fucking pain on this floor at the Barclays because Iron fucking Maiden is there. We're right under Yannick. Like, so good.
To be very clear, Hambone was injured. Hambone does not like to be in the quote unquote mosh pit. I'm one of those people, partially because I'm a photographer, who I love to be as close as possible to capture the audience, to feel it. You know, Hambone traditionally was more towards the back, towards the bar at one time. I knew it was a big deal for me to get him what was equivalently pretty much third row on the floor with standing room. I knew putting him there would be out of your comfort zone a little bit. And I mean, technically, what's I think sealed the deal for you is the crowd wasn't moving. So, you know, you were basically just enjoying a show, which was lovely from where we were at. But to see your face for the 2 hours or whatever it was for that show and not, you know, I knew you were in pain, but you never showed it. And you were just all in. And everybody around us, too, like everybody around us was psyched. Like the amount of like excitement. Bob Mould was great. We were in a theater sitting down watching a man with an electric guitar.
Against the wall.
It was good, but it was weird. Iron Maiden was like one of the best. Like if I'm going out with that, I'm good with going out with that.
Me
so
too.
Very happy. Definitely check it out if you like Iron Maiden. We did not, the one album I did not put on the list because I need to be in the zone to hear it. There is a new Smashing Pumpkins album, but I haven't quite. That might be next week.
That's got
to
be next week.
I need, and Tenet we need to do next week, too. I just need to sit down and watch it.
Beats got to watch it, too. But, oh, hey, one more album thing, if I can.
Oh, you can sure go right ahead.
Hey, but when this album drops the day after on Friday, Pensy Prep's Heartbreak and Stereo will be on Spotify, and it will be on Apple Music again, Amazon Music as well. It's going to be wherever you download your music from. So if you wanted to listen to it and you did not get one of those vinyl copies that we did through Kings Road, you can check it out on Friday.
Well, you got a lot of love for that episode from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Inside and out. Thank I don't know if people everybody. Wrote back to you, but I got a lot of compliments. Even Allison was like, it was wonderful to hear Hambone speaking from his heart. So, you know, and I believe I told you that when you're editing it. I'm like, just make sure you leave the crying in because I need you crying. That always gets us subscriptions.
Hambone tears.
Hambone tears.
Prince money.
I got to talk a little about Tiki because we should, considering that I'm getting a lot of. So we started an Instagram account last week, and I'm trying to put more stuff. I got to find some photos of you to prove to put up there too. But we need to. People are liking it. I'm actually getting more. I'm not even trying, and people are enjoying it. I guess people do like Tiki, and we should probably be talking more about it. Tiki Land Trading. I don't know exactly what Tiki Land Trading is, other than they produce Tiki mugs, but they do work with Tiki Tony and a few other Tiki designers I like. We might try to see if we can get them on the show one day. It's always tough with artists. But they started an annual subscription that jumped on immediately. It's $100 for this opening round of signing up. And in that, for the year, you get access to like a set of Mai Tai glasses, a limited Tiki mug that will not be made anywhere else, a pin, a whole bunch of other stuff that are worth well more than $100 for someone like me who spends too much on Tiki mugs. And I really appreciate that. I know a while back we reviewed the Tiki crate that had come out, and that was a great idea too. But I feel for the guy who had to make that because he had to buy the mug. He didn't make mugs. They weren't his mugs. So he had to buy them and like get the box together. That was a lot of work. I don't know if it still exists, but that was worth it. But it was a lot for that guy and I think his wife to put out. In this case, it's a manufacturer. I think I said this before. I used to give the guy from Tiki Farm a lot of shit because I'm like, you need to make a box. This would be great for it because you have the plants. You have the ability to make the mugs. In this case, these people are designers and they make their own mugs. So I think it's a good thing if you are into collecting Tiki mugs. Again, Tiki Land Trading. If you like Tiki Tony stuff, he's the one who's doing the unofficial Baby Yoda mug, and he does a lot of like Disney stuff. I really think you should check it out. I think it's worth it, even if you just get a mug. Those mugs cost a fortune anyway. So highly, highly recommend that. And I don't know, that's my little Tiki tidbit for the week, my sidebar on Tiki. We obviously appreciate all the Tiki fans out there. I know our show is called Mai Tai Happy Hour, and we only talk about pop culture, but we are Tiki people at heart. And you know, crazy today that I'm doing a Verizon event in my Tiki lounge in the Mai Tai TV set with senior leadership, and like I somehow have a job. Like it's so weird and surreal, but again, that's like the positive aspects of the world we live in right now. So we gotta take it while we got it. I need to talk a little bit about Fallout 76 before I lose my voice. Fallout 76 came out 2 years ago, 2018. It was a very quick successor to Fallout 4. It came out like within a year or two from Fallout 4. Usually you have to wait years for new games. And they announced, Bethesda announced that it would be online only. It'd be massive multiplayer. It would be like these PUBGs and games like that. I'm not a fan of that. I'm a lonely player. I like to play by myself. I play at weird hours, so I have a kid. I can't play that type of gaming that people play where they have the headsets and they do Call of Duty. So I was like, but whatever, it's Fallout. I love Fallout. Fallout's what got me back into video games. Fallout's also what made me love RPG. I always thought RPG was very much a turn-based strategy, and I always found that a little bit boring, the Final Fantasy type games. When I realized there could be real time where you literally can do an RPG game where you really work out what your type of model is, what type of your person is. Like right now I'm working on a sniper, like I'm making my guy a sniper and I'm slowly ranking him up. Like when I realized that is also an RPG, I realized I can love this type of game. And then you put it in post-apocalyptic America. That is my...
That's your jam.
That's my jam. So in this case, in this case, it was West Virginia. I don't know much about West Virginia, but I'm like, this could be interesting. There's a lot of lore. There's the Mothman. There's all this stuff out there. Let's play it. Got the game. Got the special edition. And like right from the get-go, the game was broken. Like nothing worked right. And the story was literally you walk around to abandoned computers. This game is kind of a prequel. It takes place like 25 years after the bombs went off in 2077. November 2077 is when the nuclear bombs went off. And this is 25 years after that. So it's very new into this world of mutation and fallout and radiation. And the game is entirely, like, not everyone's out of their shelters. So you're literally just going to computers and reading stuff and following robots. It was just a horrible game for when much of this game was involving the interesting humans and people you meet in this post-nuclear world. It's very boring to just be reading and then having someone just kill you out of nowhere because people are dicks. Well, they've spent 2 years rebuilding this game. They had a big update recently called The Wastelanders, which is, you know, reintroduces raiders and settlers coming back to West Virginia, coming out of the vaults, coming from other parts of the country, realizing that the bombs didn't land in West Virginia, because who the fuck would bomb West Virginia? They bombed DC, they bombed New York, they bombed the big cities. So everybody's like, let's go to a West Virginia that should be relatively still green and healthy. And they start repopulating, and you start playing either as raiders or settlers, and you start doing missions. There's humans, there's NPCs, as they're called, non-playable characters that you can interact with and do like the what you love, which is like how like you choose your own adventure trees, the dialogue trees, which is what makes Fallout great. That was an amazing beginning. Then they've changed the up-leveling so that the rank you're at is how tough the bad guys are. So you're not just like as everyone else. They also made it impossible to kill other players. So they made it, you know, other people in the multiplayer world. So you have to worry about some idiot sniping you because they're an asshole.
So they made it Fallout.
They fixed it. They fixed it. Gave you a great storyline to play, which is basically the storyline is that there is a vault out there that is where they stored the America's treasury. And they want to get the gold out of it so they can repopulate currency into the world to recreate, you know, currency. And it's a great storyline, and I've loved it. Last week, it was supposed to come first week of December, but they accidentally glitched, and the game, the update went out to Xbox, and they put it out for everybody else. It is a second free DLC called Steel Dawn, not to be confused with the sequel to Red Dawn. Make that very clear, which very if good. Anybody's actually found, I'd die to see it. I've never seen it. It's post-apocalyptic Red Dawn. If you find it ever, Hambone, let me know. It has Patrick Swayze in it. No one I know has ever seen it, but it's Steel Dawn. Not anything to do with that, but it reintroduces... Go ahead.
Did he
die in the first one? I thought, I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong, but don't hold that against me. But in this case, the Brotherhood of Steel comes to, is created and basically comes to West Virginia. The Brotherhood of Steel's whole thing is that they want to get a hold of all the guns and the technology to keep humanity from falling into, like, it's weaponry and technology that what's ruined the world. And they kind of want to just take it and make it safe for people. They're kind of a gray area, a tribe, but they have the cool technology. So they're now in there. And now you went from a world where you're being killed everywhere by these zombies and ghouls to now, like, you could see, like, the Brotherhood of Steel's, like, jets overhead. Like, maybe they'll help you out. Maybe you'll join them. Again, tons of storyline. Really, really good. It's just really expanded this what was a shitty game and turned into a very good Fallout game. On top of that, I was playing it for PS4, and the PS4, it would just take forever for load screens. It was glitchy. The experience on the PS5, there's like no load times. It is amazing. Whatever magic they've put in that system, whatever made that the PS5 as big as it is, made if making it that big has made this thing a speed demon, that like, then go right ahead. Give me a big console. I'm loving it. So I recommend everyone go out and try Fallout 76. It's cheap now. You can find it in dime store bins. It's regularly on sale because there's no Ultimate Edition. None of these updates are DLCs. You have to pay for anything. The only thing you have to pay for is if you want like cooler things in your building out of your shelter or whatever you're making. Does that sound good, Hambone? Cool. I mean, I know...
It sounds much better than it was.
I mean, it was the... Like, I'm a huge fan of the Bethesda Fallout 3, Fallout 4, Fallout Las Vegas, New Vegas, and I was just so disappointed with this to the point where, again, I bought a PS5 because I knew Bethesda was bought by Microsoft. I'm like, fuck it. They gave us a shitty game. But you know, they made up for it. So hopefully it's released on PlayStation as well. But again, just wanted to do a segment on this because I feel like, much like Fargo, some things are worth rediscovering if you might have held out on it. And I have started playing Spider-Man, the Miles Morales game. One thing I will tell you is the PS5 has these, it's a brand new controller. It's not like the old one. It's got haptic feedback. I don't know really much about that. I just consider everything a rumble pack because I'm an old man, I'm dad mode. Yes. But it does something. Like, there was a point where, like, I ran out of web fluid and it locked my triggers. Like, you felt them, like, lock up and you can't, like, pull them because you ran out. That is really cool next-gen technology.
That is pretty fun.
That is fun. Also infuriating. That storyline is better than the original Spider-Man. Now, you reviewed the original Spider-Man. This one's even more. There's less of that grind. Remember the first Spider-Man? You had to just, like, constantly go, like, stop bad guys from doing stupid crimes. And it was a grind. In this one, it's much more fluid. I'm enjoying it a lot more. I'm finding Miles Morales to be less annoying than Peter Parker. I'm enjoying that. We'll have a full review on that once I get really into that. But Fallout 76 has been eating up all my time.
Very cool.
Is there anything else going on in the life of Hambone?
Not much at all. You've heard it all. Everything that I've done,
Where can we get your country album? Single.
So you can go to Bandcamp. You can check out Secret Country on Bandcamp. The single Under the Mistletoe is out now. We wrote a country Christmas song because we couldn't do the Night Before Thanksgiving show this year. So it's definitely fun. Definitely check it out on Bandcamp.
I have a quick question for you. I was thinking about this during the Green Day segment. How does making a cover album work? I don't know if you've ever covered a song, but like, how does that, like, do you have to pay ahead of time? Do you have a license? How do you get the okay to make a covers album? Do you just have to cut a check afterwards? Like, how does that work?
I mean, you have to pay licensing for the song that you're going to do.
But do you pay that up front or do you pay that out of your earnings?
It depends. It depends. Like, if you talk to the artists themselves, they might cut you a deal and work out like a deal with you where they would get royalties on it. Because, you know, if you're a young up and coming artist and you put out a cover, it's like a thing where, like, you might not sell a whole bunch of it or get a bunch of plays. So that artist is just kind of like using it as a promotional tool to keep that song in the minds of people who would listen to it. But it really does depend. I think there's a certain degree of, like, licensing that goes into it and a bunch of, you know, lawyer shit that I'm not really privy to because never actually did a cover.
That's what I was basically
on any of our albums that I've done for anybody.
I couldn't remember right now. We talked to our friend Mary Beth a while back, and she had covered a Gigi Allen song. And I know she had to go out of her way to find Merle Allen to give him the check from the earnings, like whatever it was, like $15, because she's like, I have to give it to him. And she had to hunt him down. Look, we realized
the whole time he was just living in Nutley, like across the building from where I lived. Like, Merle Allen, up until probably recently, was not very hard to find.
But you don't know where to look for him. It's not like you can look up in the phone book anymore. But, you know, in this case,
Applebee's and Clifton.
I was looking
all the time.
I was looking at, like, you know, Green Day. In this case, like, you know, they got to pay Prince for, like, Billy Joe Armstrong. Is there any break even on cover albums, or is it literally a labor of love? Like, I'm just curious how that goes, because it seems like you probably just have to, or is it just a percent? Because maybe it's half of what the earnings is because you still are the performer in this.
I think it'll probably be something a little closer to like that. I mean, at that level, though, he does have an entire, like, he's got Warner Brothers or whatever major label behind him. So, like, they can work out any of those deals. And I'm sure that the Prince estate would probably be like, you know, they're going to get royalties for the songwriting, for the performance of the song, and the mechanical royalties for the actual recording of the song that Prince wrote. Billy Joe's royalties would probably come from, like, performance and selling the track. So,
Just so weird. It hit me while I was driving and listening to the album. I'm like, how do people make money off of, like, entire cover albums? Like, how does Me First and Gimme Gimme's make any money?
I think it's also different. It's got to be a little different in the last, like, decade when streaming became a lot more prevalent, because there was definitely, like, an Old West thing about it where there was, like, you know, like, when Heartbreak Hysteria came out, there was no streaming.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real streaming. Like, Napster didn't count because Napster was illegal. Like, there wasn't, like, oh, if I want to buy an album, I could just go to iTunes on my phone in my pocket. And, like, my buddy's like, you should check out this song, bro. And I'll be like, yeah, bro, I'll check out this song and click a button. Like, I used to have to, like, you know, go to Let It Rock in Montclair or go to the Coconuts in Clifton that became an FYE. Like, there were steps that you'd have to take to get new music. It wasn't just easy like this. So I'm sure that it's different now than it probably was even 10 years ago. But because now, like, everyone is just scrambling to get anything that they can because a lot of people don't really buy music anymore.
Yeah, it just hit me. I'm like, how does this make any money? I think I thought about it with Weezer, too. Then I didn't remember if you had ever covered a song. I know Brian Bastard had covered a song or not. But we'll ask someone.
Live, but that falls under, like, you know, cabaret licensing and, like, yeah, BMI taking, you know.
Then it has to be the hall that pays the fee. Technically, it should be not the band. But then again, who actually pays those fees? Yeah.
Oh, no, you have to. BMI will come for you in the night. Like, you have to pay those fees if you are a club or a venue, you're going to pay the fees. But, like, when it comes down to, like, a band, be like, hey, man, we're just going to pull out that's, like, Psychedelic First cover tonight. Fuck it. You guys are a great crowd. Like, there's no, like, all right, we got to figure that out. Like, that it happens. It'll appear on YouTube, but then, like, you know, that's a – I don't know, man. It's a wild world.
I got to be clear. I am pretty sure a lot of the wedding bands I've seen are not playing a BMI. I don't think the label the venue is either. So I don't know how that works, but very curious. Anyway, thank you, Hambone, for enlightening us a little bit. Even a little bit, every week, you enlighten us just a little bit more. Thank you so much.
Smart. I'm not just looks.
How can the kids reach you?
You find me on Twitter at Hambreaker. I tweet about board games. I tweet about cute animals. I tweet about Dungeons and Dragons. You follow my day-to-day adventures in podcasting and in life over on Instagram at John Hambone McGuire. I might post some pictures up soon. We'll see. George, where can the people find you?
You can reach me at GOK Creative on Twitter and on Instagram. We now have Mai Tai Happy Hour at Mai Tai Happy Hour on Instagram. We're doing Tiki Foes. We're going to do some of our stuff. Like, I get a Hambone on this too, so we can figure it out. But right now, it's a lot of Tiki stuff, and we enjoy posting them because I got to do something with the Tiki stuff. It didn't work on mine, so I'm like, this might make more sense.
It does.
Regardless. Hey, it worked for Vintage RPG. I'm like, if we can somehow get off of that somehow, we can figure it out. And cultofgeorge.com is my blog. MaiTaiTV.com is where you can find our entire archive. Rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate each and every one of you. We are not going to take a break. You're finding this out now. We're not taking a break for the holidays. Because why would we? Why would we? You know, it's not like we're going on a vacation anywhere. So we are going to be here to review things like Tenet. We're going to review this stuff well after.
Watch us. You don't have to.
Because no one else has. Thank you so much for joining us. Hambone, take us out.
Everybody remember, be nice, wear a mask, socially distance yourself. Aloha. Aloha.